In the late 1990s and in the early 2000s, Weird New Jersey magazine profiled a decades-old cold case murder that was so chillingly bizarre, it defied explanation. The magazine's editors, Mark Moran and Mark Skirman, began to receive a series of anonymous letters regarding a teenager who was supposedly the victim of either Satanists, a coven of witches, her own peers, or, perhaps most shockingly, a police cover-up. Through these strange letters, Weird New Jersey magazine was able to present an incomplete telling of the story of Jeanette DePalma. This coverage eventually led to the 2015 book, Death on the Devil's Teeth, The Strange Murder That Shocked Suburban New Jersey, authored by myself, Jesse P. Pollock, and Weird New Jersey's Mark Moran. In this audio series, we're going to discuss the events that led to the book's creation, the strange occurrences during its writing, and the developments since its publication. This is the story of a truly frightening time in suburban America. So what really happened? Let's go back to September 1972. That month, Bobby Fischer became the first American world chess champion. The Price is Right and MASH debuted on television. 11 Israeli athletes were murdered by the Black September terrorist group at the Munich Summer Olympics. And on September 19th, a parcel bomb sent to London's Israeli embassy exploded, killing one diplomat. Also on that day, patrolman Donald Schwert of the Springfield, New Jersey Police Department made a discovery that changed his and countless others' lives forever.
I was on the Springfield Police Department for 29 years. I was a patrolman when this incident happened. When I retired in 1989, I was a lieutenant. But I was a patrolman on patrol the day of this incident that I was detailed to.
What, when you say this incident, what incident are you referring to?
We had they radioed me that this woman had found an arm on the lawn of the apartment complex where she lived. And when I got there, I figured it was going to be a mannequin's arm because this lady was always being harassed by few of the kids that lived in the apartment complex. For some reason, I don't know what the reason was, but I figured this was a mannequin with ketchup on the arm.
Fellow Springfield patrolman Ed Kish was also on duty that day.
I was on patrol and a call had come in that a dog had brought a forearm in hand home to its owner that lived at the Baltimore Shore apartment.
Now, the Baltusrol Gardens apartment complex is situated on Wilson Road in Springfield Township, only about a third of a mile away from the world-famous Baltusrol Golf Course.
When I got there, the arm was laying in the grass, and I looked at it, and I said, oh, this is human, because I could see the fingernails and the color of the skin. And I asked her how the arm got there, and she said her dog found it. So I said, well, can I see your dog? And she had a dog, a little puppy. And I said, well, this puppy couldn't but got this arm to here. So that threw us off a little bit. And then later on, a woman that lived in the complex said she had a Dalmatian dog that she let run. So that's how we found out the Dalmatian dog brought the arm to that location.
So what was the next step? You have this arm just without a body. What do you do now?
Well, I radioed headquarters that they better send the detectives up. They decided that we better have a search party to check the roadbed of 78, which was just being built. It was only dirt.
Retired Detective Ed Kish.
Basically, all of us were dispatched to that area up there, and we tried to coordinate a foot search on the, I guess that you could call it the north side of Shunpike Road.
Right.
And then we all switched over to the south side. And we're not talking a lot of men. We're talking two, three, or four at the most.
We had the prosecutor's office, the sheriff's department with a bloodhound, and our group of men. And we were going to break up into teams to search the quarry area there, because that was right by where we, the apartment complex was. And we were walking along the roadbed on 78, and then we found the upper part of the right arm on the ground. So we radioed to everybody that we'd found another piece.
And it was just by a physical search, Don Schwert called out over the radio that he found a body.
We were scoured all across the quarry, and I was first one up on this knoll, and I spotted the body right away.
Hearing Schwert's radio call, Ed Kish entered the woods surrounding Springfield's Houdai Quarry. He soon found the large hill where Schwert had made his discovery.
Getting up to the top, Don Schwert was still there. I believe Howie Thompson also was up there.
Springfield Detective Howard Thompson had already made his way up the hill to take photographs of the body. Thompson would later play a key role in this investigation.
We were physically then viewing what was there. It was a body. I couldn't tell you whether it was male or female, although it was suspected that it might have been a female, because there was a pocketbook there. The clothing was so-so shaped, but the body was deteriorated.
Well, it was a flat area, and I'd say maybe 20 feet around, flat. She had no shoes on or socks, but the animals had eaten most of the flesh off her feet, all around her head and everything. And she was laying face down, and she had a blue t-shirt on and tan slacks.
Now, this is where the memories of Don Schwert and Ed Kish kind of differ.
Whether it was pants or skirt, I couldn't tell you. There was a shirt. I don't recall what color, whether it was a solid, checkered, or plaid, or what.
Was the body lying face up or face down?
I believe it was face up.
What about the orientation of the limbs?
I kind of remember probably they were at her side.
Mark and I later showed Don Schwert a diagram we had made for our book based on several different eyewitness descriptions of the body, and Schwert confirmed that the remaining arm, the left arm, was found under the body's head, like it had been resting on it. He also confirmed that the body was found lying face down, not on its back.
You know, one of the reasons why cops write reports.
The issue of police reports plays a pretty big role in this story, but we'll get back to that later.
We have to get the coroner up there to make the pronouncement and everything before they could move the body. So then they were deciding how to move the body without disturbing any of the bones or anything, so they got a backboard up there, but we had to wait for the coroner to come.
It had been decided that the easiest way to take that body out of there, because the side of the hill was so steep, was to call the fire department and let them use their ladder truck.
Right.
And remove the body from the quarry side.
Now, while efforts were underway to remove the body from this location, Don Schwert began to realize that the clothing on the remains closely matched the description of the clothing last seen on a local teenage girl who had been missing for 6 weeks by that point.
I had remembered that this girl was missing, this De Palma girl. She had been missing probably 2 months, and everybody thought she had run away. And they had a description of what she was wearing, the blue t-shirt and the tan slacks.
Don Schwert wasn't the only Springfield officer on the scene that day who was thinking of the local runaway.
If we go back to when we were over at the Baltimore Apartments, Dominic Olivio came up there. And I think at that point, he was assigned to the Detective Bureau. And the first thing in mind, him and I had a conversation because we were friends. And I had worked with him in the Detective Bureau for a while. His comment was, it could be Jeanette De Palma. That theory came about because he said, it's the only runaway we have in Springfield. So that there were thoughts on behalf of members of the Springfield Police Department, it could be Jeanette De Palma.
And then the prosecutor's office of the Detective Bureau took over, and we just were pushed aside. And the big wheels took over and started their own investigation.
My co-author, Weird New Jersey's Mark Moran, discussed the initial stages of this investigation with Ed Kish back in 2013.
Now, what about evidence collection at the scene, did somebody go through the forest floor with a fine-tooth comb looking for any articles of evidence that might have fallen beneath the leaves or into the dirt?
Yes. That would have been the job of the detective bureau, which most likely would have been either Bob Taft, Howie Thompson, Sam Calabrese, or I believe Dominic Olivio, if he was in the detective bureau at the time. I think he was.
Was anything recovered that would somehow lead to anybody believing in a cause of death? I mean, well, let's say there was no evidence that there was something used that might have been facilitated suicide or anything like that.
No, the best that I can recall, there was not anything that was found there that would be that could be used to conclusively say that foul play was suspected in any way, shape, or form.
So now investigators were left with a body, but no clues, no murder weapon, no obvious signs of trauma thanks to the body's extensive decomposition. Where would they go from here? Investigators hoped an autopsy of the remains would reveal key answers. Once it was removed from the quarry, the body was brought to the Sullivan Funeral Home in nearby Roselle. The funeral home had been functioning as a de facto morgue for Union County Police at the time. Working on the intuition of Schwert and Olivo, Springfield Detective Sergeant Sam Calabrese decided to secure the dental records of the missing girl, Jeanette De Palma. Calabrese located De Palma's dentist and drove him and her dental records to Sullivan's morgue. I spoke with this dentist in 2014 under the strictest terms of anonymity.
I remember specifically that she, that the body was on a morgue table, a metal table, and that table was covered in plastic. And when I arrived, they kind of unwrapped the plastic so that I could have access to the body. Calabrese handed me a skull, so to speak. She was just wrapped in plastic. It may have been a plastic zip up there. I just know that the plastic was unfolded and that I was able to then handle parts of the body to determine from the dental records that it was her. But at the time, it was a very harrowing experience. So, I mean, I don't want my name. I mean, I was going to give you whatever information I could that I remembered. I'm afraid that these people were afraid. And I don't want, you know, I don't want to go into it yet. They were odd, to say the least. An odd family. And I don't want to be part of why they're angry or they remember things or, you know, because, quite frankly, I've lost day and night thinking about these people looking to get me because I identified their daughter. I mean, they're strange people. So, I just want you to know that. Do you understand the circumstances? This is, you know, whatever you're writing about is a story that I would assume is an unsolved murder or a ritual murder or whatever it was. They were strange people. There was a big family. For God's sakes, I don't want anything other than, and this is not a happy thing for me. It's something that's haunted this area for a long time. Keep me out of this, please.
In the next installation of this series, we'll discuss the source of this doctor's fears and why efforts to understand Jeanette De Palma's death through her autopsy were unsuccessful. Special thanks to Donald Schwert and his family, Ed Kish, Mark Moran, Mark Skirman, Rusty and Christina from Antiquity Echoes, and Weird New Jersey's cult of the letter senders.